You know, as I think about all the places where you have your hands in things, I think one of our second encounters was Adventure for America, where we're actually judging some of the contestants for fellowships. But, you know, as you...
Yeah, well, VFA is a tough one. May they rest in peace. VFA, I was on the Detroit Advisory Board for that. And, you know, VFA was a great program. And it did fold. It was... deeply unfortunate that it did, but it also had a bit of a funny mission, right? Which is to, it was kind of like the Peace Corps, right? Get a bunch of, you know, college graduates from the U.S. into a lot of places where, again, you didn't see as much of that impact, and create pathways for that. You know, and VFA did that, right? We placed lots and lots of fellows, right, from across the country into Detroit and into startups, and nonprofits, but, but, you know, these days we also have, you know, we, the state now has four R1 research universities. So it used to be just the three, you know, Carnegie rated, you know, university in terms of research funding, but, you know, Wayne State, Michigan State, and U of M. But now Michigan Tech also qualifies. And so,
right.
So what used to be the sort of university research corridor across sort of the, I would say, like a 96 kind of corridor across the middle of your hand here, you know, now extends as a T or upside
right.
down.
Now we're going to go, right. Now we're going to get up to Houghton. You're right.
But you know, curiously, you know, Michigan Tech has had a presence for a long time, actually, in Ann Arbor too. So the you know, we talked earlier about the Willow Run Labs and Arum and so forth. That is what Michigan Tech, right, it has as a presence, right, with their research right. actually in Southeast Michigan. But you know, the investments have been made over the last 2 years or committed, you know, because by 2027 you'll have the UMCI, University of Michigan Center for Innovation. 2027 you also have Henry Ford, MSU Future of Health, $3 billion. You know, kind of center versus
3 billion, right?
Yeah,
it's going to be a massive facility.
Yeah, have a new center. You've got Bedrock's Grash Innovation District, right? Also coming up. They won't give a number, give a date, but you know, it'll be probably 2027. Yeah, for all that, and you know, we brought some friends in for an anchor to anchor that from Grand Rapids with Banff Health to kind of bridge that, and then you have Wayne State with a new health science research center coming up. It's over $100 million, you know, research center, but these outposts innovation, and these they are outposts. Right, because they sit sort of in parts of the city where there's not a lot of kind of density otherwise, right, of companies and founders or capital, and so the danger there, I'll just say, is this, and the risk we run, not the danger, but the risk we run, is in the last 2 years I've been to, you know, 20 plus countries and investing across a lot of them, and trying to bring a lot of those back here and. From Southeast Asia to India to Africa to the Middle East. We invested most recently in a Kenyan electric motorcycle company, right, that we're trying to help figure out. And bridge here, we're leading a major investment in a German company that we're working to bring to Detroit now. That's kind of the Ford of housing, that can build housing like we build cars, right? So that's another one I'm very excited about called Gropius. But we're doing that because you have to create the density. The challenge you have around the world is the world is littered with technology parks that are sitting empty, where governments, typically universities, built out all this infrastructure for people that never came. So your statement about build it and they will come, I actually disagree with. The only reason why people come really to places like New Lab is because there's a density of a founders' activity here.
The founders, right? The sort of a core mass of people and investment.
But you know what that is things like Black Tech Saturdays, right? It's things like you know, Megan Ward and Femology and some of the Founders Fellowship again, which has been a new lab program running for, you know, for since they started the lab right out of Brooklyn, or really New York EDC really gave NYC New Lab their start, right, with Brooklyn Navy Yards, and all the founders here, you know, like a lot of the founders here in this building that are not mobility are our founders, the companies that we've invested in or brought to this building. Right. Because they're not mobility, but, you know, you need the density, right, of founders and activity here. And so we've really helped with that, you know, with electric plant company and a bunch of the cybersecurity companies and all this stuff. So anyway, you have to connect the dots. And so the critical kind of point here of our evolution is there's a lot being built out, right, of these buildings, right, for the kind of activity and programs that they expect, you know, people to engage in. But you have to build the social infrastructure of what leads people into any of this stuff. And, you know, it's just tough. I mean, you know, Detroit is up and coming, but we're not out of the woods. You know, the majority of a lot of the commercial office space right in downtown Detroit is empty. And, you know, it's a huge opportunity for a lot what needs to fill in. But for me, real estate is an index bet on the health of the local economy. But you have to be able to drive that local economy. Where are the jobs going to come from? You know, is sort of one question, but really, where are the companies going to come from? And this notion of attracting companies to set up shop here that are headquartered elsewhere, you know, that's one strategy. You know, it's one that I had seen groups like Spark execute out of Ann Arbor for a long time, what I would call the ABC strategy. Ann Arbor is the Bangalore of California. I don't think that's a recipe for long-term success. I think that's that kind of approach. You know, it's just like sometimes why the end of the film credits is because, you know, they just felt they couldn't compete right with the race to the bottom. You know, everyone's going to offer better and more tax incentives in order to attract things. And again, it's hard when you're giving up so much, right, to get people here. But what's sticky is when founders make decisions. You know, like a founder like me will make a decision about what happens to my 1,000 people, right, in my company. Are they here? Are they in Austin? Are they in California? Are they in London? And quite frankly, you know, I was sad when we had to go and expand the company beyond Ann Arbor, because after, you know, getting to 400 people, whatever, my next, you know, 400 couldn't be in Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor was not building housing. They weren't building commercial real estate. There was no availability of commercial real estate. I already had 2 buildings downtown. I couldn't get a third. And so we opened up in Detroit. We opened up in Austin at the same time. And in that time frame, quite frankly, Austin grew to 300 people and Detroit grew to 50. And you sort of have to ask the question, like, why? Like, what are the gaps? And a large part of it is like the basic things that you think about if you're thinking from the ground up. Like, what does an average person sort of see, experience, and feel on the ground? Not what an institution thinks kind of top down they can sort of build and they will come.
Right.
You have to think about the legibility, right, of a community. Like, how do I get here from there? What walkability, transit, you know, what is it?
Just overall quality of life, right?
Yeah, but
absolutely.
More, but just day to day, like if I'm walking from one part of the city to another, what's in between? Is it a bunch of like sketchy empty lots? Is it, you know, what's it look like, right? And so that's where, again, I've not wanted to do real estate. Frankly, that's not my that's not my background or jam, but I care about the quality of life and the lived experiences of people on the ground with this stuff, right? So we are doing kind of what I would say is sort of the infill development of sort of transition zones. That's kind of our strategy for coming in and helping to support. So we've been supporting a lot of other developers in the city for a long time, for years. You know, folks like Century Partners are increasing Black home ownership in the city, right? And we help them go from single family to multifamily kind of development. Or Greatwater Capital, right? My friend Roger and other Ann Arbor, right? John Updike, but they and locals in Detroit like Jed, but they built 3,000, almost 3,000 units, right, of private affordable housing, right, non-LIHTC, without federal, you know, tax credits and funding, all that stuff, but just on their own. That's the kind of stuff that we need to be building in the city. And, you know, people talk about, you know, all the investment going to downtown and nothing for the neighborhoods. Definitely true. And we got to figure that out. We also got to figure out how to connect the neighborhoods and what's happening downtown to the neighborhoods, right, in a more meaningful way. So, you know, so the stuff that's happening with like Life Remodel, you know, Diallo Smith's West Side Community Center with Durfee Innovation Center, his new East Side Center, right, with Anchor Detroit, and now his program called Tech Remodeled, which, you know, we're going to support, and, you know, the Bombers have supported. And these are the pathways you sort of create to the economic opportunity that should exist in the city. Because one of the defining dysfunctions of the city right now that we have to work to correct is most local Detroiters work outside the city. They have to leave the city for work. And most of the jobs in the downtown, you know, central business district are actually people coming in from the inner ring suburbs outside the city in for work.
Right.
And that's just not long-term.
That doesn't make any sense. Right. Long-term, that's not viable. You're absolutely right.
Well, so these are kind of things we're trying to connect the dots. So long story short, our goal, right, as a community, as a foundation, as a family office, and trying to help affect policy change from the federal level through the state to the local level, is about connection. Is about creating the air cover, right, for what the ground game actually looks like. Because you have a lot of people here that have been trying to do this stuff and carrying the water in this community for a long time. They've never sort of gotten really the support or even recognition, right, from the folks who often have all the resources that have been produced. But again, it's just very short-sighted not to redeploy that into all the folks who are creating the next era, right, of this company, of this community's success. And so that's what we have to help to bridge and create pathways for.
To our listening and viewing audience, you've been listening to riveting conversation with Doug Song, who has put his money where his mouth is, as he has said, and he has doubled down not only on Detroit, but on Michigan and the region, and in so many ways is helping to uplift the community through more meaningful jobs in tech, better housing, and better lifestyle for so many people. Doug, you know, I think the one thing we need more of as I listen to you talk is we need to hear more from you. And so I want all our listening and viewing audience to share this message broadly, because I think you're spot on in terms of some of the things we need as a state and as a community to be thinking about if we want the robust future for our children that we imagine.
Yeah, well, I don't think they would listen more to me. I'd say, you know, but I think what I would say is we have a responsibility as leaders in this community. So I've said this before, you know, the chamber and, you know, at Mackinac, we sponsored a bunch of, you know, the sessions on innovation and bring in my friends nationally who are doing this work around my friend Victor Huang leads a really fascinating organization teaching a community not how to be workers, but how to be owners, right? How to think entrepreneurially, because entrepreneurship is about solving problems. And, you know, that there's an ability to do this, right, in every sector, right, in every part of our world, not just in tech. And so you have so many entrepreneurial people. I mean, I would say, you know, this whole notion of Detroit hustle is harder and stuff, and everyone's got a side hustle. It's that everyone's finding an opportunity, right, in some way in the city to contribute meaningfully toward change. But we have to create the ways we can harness that energy and amplify it, support it, and provide, again, a more robust kind of environment in which, you know, we're all learning together. Because that you know, to kind of discussion on the workforce and so forth, and, you know, what we have to do to kind of get into all that. You know, look, the majority of my people in my company, in Duo, 80% of my team did not come from my industry, right? From cybersecurity and all that. Many didn't even come from tech. Because wow. Building in Michigan, you know, where would I draw those people from? You know, sometimes my former companies, but, you know, there just wasn't that much of a pool of those people. You know, my prior companies were only a couple hundred people. So, you know, you have to build that. And so with intentionality, we've done things like, you know, created Duo University, you know, our second, you know, which was kind of a training program within our company, and not just in engineering, but, you know, we had playbooks across every department. We had a culture of agile retrospectives where we all learned together. It was never about who was right, but, you know, what we need to do next, right? When we stop, start, and continue, right? Every decision was sort of rigid that way. We push this to make it down, right? So we taught kind of people how to take responsibility for decision making and problem solving, right? Thinking about that on their own. Because when you have an entire team where everyone thinks like a CEO, because they all are owners, you know.
Our owners, right.
You know, the tech community, one thing special about the startup community that I think is really important for Detroit is that everybody is an owner. Everybody gets options, stock options, and ownership in the company. Which is say, you know, you put in your back pocket. I tell people, it's just a lottery ticket. Don't think about it that too much. But know that you have a piece of this. And if this
right. And you have wealth, you're acquiring wealth. And that's what wealthy people do is.
We're building wealth. We're not acquiring wealth. And that's the thing I just want to kind of be careful about, because I think, you know, the reality is that, you know, from just as an, you know, sort of guerrilla economist, that's what I think about this in a way. you create value in this world, right? You don't just redistribute it or acquire it, because it doesn't just naturally exist under the ground. Like, you know, someone's still got to dig it up or create it or whatever, right? But we create wealth. We create value in this world through our efforts. But, you know, if you're successful, then you all get to win together, right? The team, right? What's fun about building a company, just like being part of any team, is winning together. And when Duo exited, we created over 100 millionaires, you know? And so they've all gone off and built new businesses, some in tech, some not, like here in Detroit. You know, some of my finance guys built a private dog bar cafe called Barkside, which I love, you know, over the east side, over at Kercherville there. You know, a lot of folks doing interesting things post-Duo. But that's really the sort of insight that I think the greatest sort of startup accelerator or program that anyone can be part of is a successful startup. Because there's an infinite number of ways to do things incorrectly or wrong, right? Just like you can try, you know, and fail any number of ways. And I think this whole notion of you have so much more to learn from failure than from success that they have in Silicon Valley is wrong, right? You can just fail until you die, right? That doesn't really help you. What helps is getting the keys to success, learning on someone else's dime, seeing what they do, how they move, and building up a tool bag, right, of tools that you can apply to the problem that you want to tackle. And the kind of cross-training, like, you know, Crystal Brown, one of the founders we backed and wrote the earliest checks for, she, you know, she came from automotive before she went into life sciences. And life sciences, she did this with my friends in Ann Arbor. And then, you know, I helped her kind of line up funding throughout Michigan and kept her here instead of going to Boston. And so she's killing it now. But all those skills from her prior career in automotive were directly translatable, right, in terms of management, in terms of, you know, quality, in terms of engineering. And so, you know, I tell people all the time, like, you know, we're trained so much to go into this kind of corporate ladder climbing, a very linear path to success. I go from, like, you know, engineer one to senior engineer to manager to, you know, director to VP, whatever. And that's fine. You know, nothing wrong with that. But there's as much to be learned from not ladder climbing, but rock climbing. Right? Going sideways, all different routes to the top.
I love that analogy. That's, you know, that actually mirrors more people's experience if you think about it. You know, if you look at how many people study one thing in college and then never practice in that given discipline, you know, they never find work in there or their interests change and align differently.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, you can never connect the dots looking forward, you know, like life just happens and you just do the best you can, right, putting one step in front of the other. Looking backwards, and you can sort of make sense of what is he did and why and how they're all connected. But, you know, the only training I really had to be CEO was being a RA, a resident advisor in East Quad, right, at University of Michigan, right? Because it's the same kind of thing, right? You know, you're sort of trying to help support a community of people, all who are learning together, but also caring for their social kind of health and connection. You know, when someone is like, you know, holed up in their room for like, you know, a week on end, you're like, you got checking on them. Like, how you doing? Is everything okay? And then, you know, but caring for people and their progress and, you know, again, how a community sort of moves forward together, you know, that's, and conflict resolution, you know, that was a big thing. You know, I learned all these skills as an RA, not as a corporate experience anywhere. In fact, I learned a lot of the wrong things to do, you know, in sort of corporate America, right? Where it's like, you know, nowhere else in any team, like we've all been on some kind of like, you know, sports team, informal, whatever, kickball or whatever. And I'm not a sports guy. I'm a skateboarder, right? So kind of a lone wolf, but this is my team sport. But I do know this: if you're out in the field and you clip your teammate, you'll all fail, right? And yet somehow in corporate America, you know, you see these meetings happen where the people get together and say, okay, we're going to do that. And this guy, someone turns around and whispers, yeah, screw that. We're going to do this instead. And they think somehow that that's cool or normal. Like, that makes no sense. And yet all the time in corporate America, you got all these internal politics and people against you. Like, we got the guns pointed inside the foxhole. What are we doing here? And so that's why I like startups, because there's no room for that. You know, no one's got time for that kind of nonsense.
No one has time. That's really true. No one has time for that in the startup environment. Well, listen, Doug, this has been a treat catching up with you and covering a range of subjects about the dynamic growth and change we're seeing across our city, our neighborhoods, and ultimately across the state. You're going to be at homecoming next week, so we'll check back in with you to hear more about what's happening in Detroit. Until then, thank you so much for joining us, Doug. This has been really, really terrific to catch up with you.
Thank you. And if there's one thing I'll just leave for your listeners, Ron, it's just to sort of appeal to them for not, you know, so what they can do, but how they can behave. Because, you know, so much of how a community operates, it's not about what you do, but how. And, you know, this notion of sort of being catalytic, right? Sort of having impact, right? Doing a small thing that leads to some a bit much bigger thing is really about what your efforts and intentions really look like. And it's not just kind of golden rule, like treat people the way you hope to be treated. But, you know, people all the time, I remember telling Johnny about this, like how we built Ann Arbor startup community through events like Ann Arbor New Tech Meetup. Was, you know, people show up and it's not a good event if you've come and met a bunch of people. It's a good event you've come and you've introduced a bunch of people. Right? How you create value in the community and the network beyond yourselves, because ecosystems require network effects. Network effects only happen when people give freely of themselves on behalf of others. And where we all take the kind of bets and chances to support one another that sometimes don't even make any sense. Like, I just met somebody and 5 minutes later, I'm like, hey, I got someone for you to meet. But that's the way that's what building a community actually is. Yeah. And so my appeal to your listeners is do that work, be that person, be that super connector. Cause that's the graph of relationships through which, you know, people need opportunity, resources, all find each other. And so that's all of our jobs, right? Not just mine.
Thank you so much, Doug. And until next time, get disrupted with us. Share your feedback, share your comments, and share this story with all of your friends and followers. And let's be the connectors Doug is talking about here. Let's connect the dots and get disrupted together. Take care, my friends. Until next time.